When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to
Mile High Hockey Lab.
Mile High Hockey Lab.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Adrian from the Mile High Hockey Lab. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I'm really excited to be here with my fellow Avalanche fans and fellow Mile High Hockey contributors. I'm here with Evan, Ezra, and Jackie. Thank you three for joining me. While I have your attention, as I always say, please subscribe, like, and share. Turn your alerts on if you're watching on YouTube so you know every time we go live. And if you enjoy these broadcasts on YouTube, don't forget that all of these podcasts are available on your preferred streaming platforms, whether it's Spotify, iTunes, or Audible. Just go search Mile High Hockey Lab. This is actually our 21st edition, so congratulations to the three of you and myself, I'd say, on almost 25 editions so far into this Mile High Hockey Lab experiment. Yeah. So I just want to get right into it. I'm pretty pumped about where the Avs sit right now. I'm sure you guys could figure that as I'm a typical homer. but I feel as though we should talk about what happened against the Arizona Coyotes in both games. And see kind of if my opinion on the outcome and kind of the way the games went is different in any way from yours. So we'll start there with the home and home with Arizona. And I'll start with you, Evan, our managing editor. Evan, it seems like the Avs power play has really been rolling, and we saw that be put on display for the 11th straight time and in both games against the Coyotes. What are you crediting the sudden influx of success for the Avalanche power play to?
Oh, yeah. That power play has been phenomenal. I mean, I think it's now 11 straight games with a goal. So that's very impressive. I'm wondering what the franchise record is.
14.
Mm-hmm. Look at you, Ezra. Look at you.
I was just reading about it.
No. So I think 14 is definitely attainable. And, you know, I think when you think about the great equalizer about it. I mean, when you have MacKinnon and Rantanen obviously working together and both of them on the torrid pace that they're on, that definitely helps. And we'll talk about that more later in the show.
Yeah.
And I think also too, especially the last couple of games, has been the return of Cale Makar, obviously from his injury. So yeah, that definitely helps when he's power playing or when he's quarterbacking, you know, power play unit one. So long as those three kind of keep it up, then this power play is going to be unstoppable. And
yeah, we talked a little bit last week about how last year they had a lot of success on the power play, but they also had a lot of power play chances and a lot more than they had seen. I feel like, though, and I'd have to look into whether or not the stats really back this claim up, but I feel like since that conversation, that might have changed. I feel like the Avs have three or four power play opportunities a game. Jackie, I think we got you. I don't know. We had some technical difficulties there.
I'm
but
here. Can you hear me now?
Yes, there you are. Right, perfectly cool. Loud and clear. I was wondering why we didn't get your classic high, very chill high when we introduced. But just back to the Coyotes and Avalanche. In the second game just last night, the Avs had a two-goal lead with about 10 minutes – or 10 minutes left in the third. But we're unable to hold on to that. Do you credit that more to the Avalanche kind of like letting up, or do you think that the Coyotes deserve a little bit of credit?
I'd say both.
Okay.
Coyotes have been a thorn in their side for several years now. I think it's just something about their style. Maybe because Andre Turingi used to coach the Avs, so maybe he has a little bit, I don't know, has the team a little fired up to play them or something. I don't know. Yeah. Or he knows a little bit more about some of our best players. So maybe he game plans better against us. I don't know. There's just something about how the Coyotes matchups aren't like the classic, just beat the bad team and walk out with 2 points kind of thing. So I think there is something to how the teams play each other, but definitely the third period was like a letdown. Like they were just trying to get it over with as quick as possible, and that didn't really work either.
Yeah, I felt similarly. I do think, though, that it showed a lot for the Avs to, when they did give up the lead, to respond by getting it back pretty quickly. They were fortunate, though, and this kind of leads into what we have already talked about, that a power play came like literally as the PA announcer was crediting the goal for Arizona. The Avs got a trip. The Avs got a power play opportunity, and they were able to capitalize. I see now in my script that I left injury report heading into today's contest. Landeskog, Makar. Fortunately, Makar is back, but I did see some video of Landeskog skating courtesy of Brennan Voigt. I think that's how you say his last name. If it's not Brennan, write me and tell me I'm stupid.
I think it's Brennan Voigt, but yeah, all right. Anyway.
Either way, some awesome video from practice back in Colorado today of Landeskog skating pretty fast. Ezra, what does that mean to you? And do you foresee a return maybe sooner than we thought? Or do you still think it's kind of like a second round type of timeline?
I think it's still right in line with what I thought all along, which is, not all along. Obviously, when it sounds like he's coming back in January, that's what I thought. But recently, yeah. I've been thinking first round of the playoffs, and I still think that seems right. He's skating now, which is great. It's exciting to see him at practice. I'm sure it's a boon to the guys, on the ice who are able to play, but he's not ready.
Right.
And he's got to really get back in, not only in playable shape with his legs underneath him, but he's also got to get his timing back, and he's got to get a lot back. So he's going to still be practicing in a red jersey probably for a little bit. So nice. I think the report I was hearing out of practice was that, you know, he's and by that I mean I read somebody else's reporting in
we all
but just to be clear was that, you know, it everybody's happy that he's on the ice, and he's maybe a little bit ahead of the timeline that they were worried about being kind of the later end of the timeline, but they're still not projecting him back in the lineup anytime soon.
That makes sense. And then just to touch on your takeaways from the Arizona home and home, what stood out to you?
Yeah, I mean, that third period is just it's disappointing to see them take their foot off the gas against a team like Arizona, who plays a game that is so simple. Like their game is defend all the time.
It's like a torture chamber.
Yeah, and then capitalize on the one mistake that the other team makes. And they do always seem to score on those little mistakes. Mm-hmm. So to not be super dialed in is to invite that comeback, and it is disappointing. Definitely. I put that on the Avs, not on the Coyotes.
Gotcha. So you credit you don't give as much credit to the Yotes as you think that the Avs kind of let go.
The Yotes do what the Yotes always do.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's funny because I will say, and I wrote this in the recap, excuse me, the Yotes have, I think, like 7 road victories, regulation road victories, and 20 regulation home wins. Yeah. So I think there's something to Mullet Arena. And Jackie, I messaged you in the chorus, but I just want to pay compliments live on YouTube. Your preview headline, like, actually it made me laugh out loud. I think you said rock the mullet, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so
it was my once yearly stroke of genius. I'm not very good at the headlines, but it definitely came to me.
When it happens and you roll with it, right?
Yeah. Yep.
I don't know what Arizona does with Mullet Arena because it's working somehow.
Exactly.
Watch them now be like, oh, your new arena, can't have it. And then they just live in mullet forever.
It's sort of like the Eagles. Like they have the smallest arena in the AHL, but it's full. So it's a lot better than most of the other places.
That's true.
It's kind of like what you do with the space matters more than just like sheer numbers.
Yeah. And I wonder too, just in line with my other question, like, was it more the Avs or more the Coyotes? Is it more like the Coyotes are familiar with Mullet Arena or that teams that visit them are not? You know what I'm saying? I wonder which plays into it, because I feel like the dudes from bigger franchises probably don't prefer the vibe, whereas from the Arizona perspective, it kind of reinforces that underdog mentality that they seem to take with them into every game.
What do you think of that?
I think it's both, honestly, because I was in the building for Friday's game. Mm-hmm. I was very late notice. I was like, oh, you know what? I'm just going to buy a ticket and go down to Denver, whatever. And at least Friday's game, like the Avs were pretty much on the front foot for almost the entire time. I feel like it was maybe just like the start of the second period where Arizona was leading in shots for a quick moment. Before the Avs really started to turn it up in that second and third period, it was just a matter of, you know, being pesky, not being able to get through the defense. And that's just all that Arizona does, as Ezra said, right? That was Friday's game. And then yesterday, Sunday, that was more so, I feel like, Arizona really giving it to the Avs in that third period. Versus it was a mix of Arizona going forward, giving it all they got, and the Avs also breaking down defensively. Mm-hmm. So obviously that combo is not great if you're an Avs fan. If you have only one of them, like it was on Friday for the Avs, where they just couldn't get through the defense just because that's just the way it was. I feel like that's fine because they eventually broke through, right. But they almost blew it on Sunday because they both couldn't get through the defense and also let Arizona really pound back at them. Yeah. So
nonetheless, it turned into a pretty entertaining game at least yesterday. And it ended with quite a, I guess, showdown between netminder Connor Ingram and Alexander Georgiev, who it went 7 rounds in the shootout. But the real showstopper was the Valeri Nichushkin move that finally beat Ingram. Yeah, exactly, Evan. That's, I believe, his first shootout attempt as a pro, and it looks like maybe he should take Evan Rodriguez's spot. What do you think, Ezra?
That so much surprised me. Sorry, I just wanted to say that, but go on, Ezra.
Now we'll come back to you.
No, yeah, I it surprised me too. It was a beautiful move. I loved it, obviously. You don't see that let the puck slide little hesitation from a lot of players. And I think he had the advantage of having no tape on him. You know what I mean? Ingram had no idea anything like that could possibly be coming.
Yeah, exactly. So, what's he about to do?
But obviously it's more in the really quick finish around the pad than that little hesitation.
The hands.
It was awesome. And Rodriguez has, we've seen him do the same move every time.
And it worked maybe twice now.
So his problem is the opposite. The tape is out there. So I'd love to see Nichushkin get more opportunities.
Yeah.
If there are more shootouts, which I'd much rather there are not.
Exactly. I was like, dang it. This is exactly how this goes when you let a team like Arizona back into a game. You pepper them throughout the overtime period. Somehow you don't beat Connor Ingram, and then they beat you in a shootout, and then all of the naysayers of shootouts come out of the woodwork. Jackie, what did you think of Alexander Georgiev's response? He kind of was caught off guard on the last goal from Clayton Keller. It was like a spinorama. You just put it on net. He wasn't even down. What did you think of his performance all around, and what did you think of him in the shootout?
Much like the rest of the team, the third period probably wasn't his best. But, he definitely stepped up big in the shootout. Because he's been scored on a few times in the shootout first. So for him to put up a shutout, I think it was 7 shooters. So that is pretty good for him. And it was like both teams are kind of trying to do the same thing, like shoot on the goaltender. And that's another reason why I really liked Nuke's move, is because it was like it changed it up. Like not only was it different, obviously, for him. And he did go one other time. It wasn't with the Avs, but he was 0-for-1 going into this. But I like looking up shootout stats after we have one, just because it's
weird.
It's a lot of things you wouldn't expect. Like some guys shoot way more than others. Like some guys have never done it, and so it's just kind of funny to see the statistics. And I completely agree. Like Erod needs to be put on the shelf now, especially since we have a new shootout hero in Nuke.
Yeah.
I was rooting for Jack Johnson to go. I mean,
That would have been awesome. About
before, I looked it up. It was 32% in 40 some attempts. So, why not? It's kind of fun when one goes deep because you see a bunch of guys that haven't had the opportunity to go before. So, if you're 7 deep, I would have thrown out Jack Johnson and be like, hey, you know, the stats back it up. He's got some moves. So
Yeah, that would have been so fun.
That would have been funny because nobody would have expected it. Yeah. Like, why Jack Johnson? But been
Jackie knows exactly why.
Yeah. I was going to say, I can already hear Av's Twitter going, oh God, why is Jack Johnson
like
doing
this? Yeah, exactly. Like, this is so stupid. And it's like, hey, they were rolling guys out that have never scored on it before. Like, Malgin, I think he was 0 for 1 in his career before. Mm-hmm. I still think it's odd they haven't used Newhook at all. I mean, he's a skilled guy. Like,
that's a good point.
Like, what? At some point when you're 7 deep, like, you wouldn't think about Newhook as, I think it's a little strange.
I feel like Newhook probably would have been 8th if I had to guess. I mean, who else would have, who else win at that point? I feel like you'd do Newhook, maybe Gerard, and Taves. Then
5. Taves. I would think Byram would get a chance at some point.
Byram, yeah.
Probably before Taves, even. Byram has a little better shot than Taves does.
He's more creative. Like, Byram would have tried something. Like, it might or might not work, but he definitely would try something.
We just have to get to like 15 rounds to get Jack Johnson. And then we can see it happen.
And I want I just want him to stop at the dot and just slap one in. That's how I want him to get one.
I want to see the move. He's probably still got it in the bag.
Yeah. Speaking of moves, Evan, you said you were surprised by Nichushkin.
Oh my God!
Tell me why. I mean, he's pretty skilled, but I agree with you. I don't know that we've seen anything to lead us to think he could pull off a move like that.
No, I mean we haven't. I mean we think of him as like the power forward, the
gritty
like,
guy,
the gritty forechecking guy, right on the top six. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I didn't think he had that move in him, and you know, I was half watching this and then half watching another thing for something else, and I saw that happen. I nearly fell out of my chair. I just kind of went, what? I was like, what? So I don't know. It blew me away. It blew everybody away. I mean,
He's studying tape of Jack Johnson. Maybe that's the explanation. That's where he got the move from.
Everybody,
I think
impressed,
it's the Forsberg, and I think Landy would do that move often. So I don't know if he like had it in his mind he was going to keep doing that. But the hesitation, I think, is something like Kucherov started. I don't think he's the only one that does it, but he might have got that from his
he's the one who like he'll just go over the puck and it'll go 5-hole on the goalie because they
yeah
can't keep
he'll like stop then he'll like almost stop and then just shoot it. But there's other variations of that, like that hesitation, but it seems smart if you can pull it off, because like the goalie is watching like
your hands, like,
probably watching him see that hands and him stick handling, and then it's just like such a fake like that to do it, and you can pull it off. It's great. So I am glad that, because that game was pretty boring, especially back to back against the Coyotes. It's like just end this game. So I'm glad the shootout at least gave us some sort of novelty, something different to appreciate from this game, and then obviously winning. Losing that would have hurt a lot more.
Both games were not the best, unfortunately. And I know too, I was so upset, and I was in the building on Friday and everybody else was upset when Rantanen's empty net shot was blocked by the ref. What are the chances of that? I mean,
If he doesn't get to 50, he needs to like write the NHL. Like,
yeah. And then for him to get hooked down and they call it a tripping penalty, but they don't give him the goal.
The goal. The yeah. That like, too was interesting. Yeah.
That, That's so where, like, ref blocking it. That's Miko's got to just wait 1 second longer before he shoots.
Yeah,
to go a little bit. But the pull down, that's the ref actively taking a goal away.
100%.
Rantanen's rage against the refs continues.
Yeah, well that's why I named the podcast today "Finish Strong," because I feel like a part of the Avs doing well over the next couple of weeks as the regular season comes to an end, within a Central Division title race, is Nathan MacKinnon seeking 100 points in the regular season for the first time in his career, and of course Mikko Rantanen becoming a 50 goal scorer for the first time in his career. And given the fact that there are about 10 games left, you know, who knows, this guy is capable of scoring 2 and 3 in a night. It's possible that he gets close to Joe Sakic's Avalanche record of 54 goals. I know, not the Nordiques record. But essentially, the poll of the week, I did two of them. The first one I did was I wanted to see where Avalanche fans thought Mikko would land when all was said and done with 10 games left to go. And that 10th game, by the way, is a makeup game against the Predators at the end of the year. So if you're not seeing it on the schedule, that's why. I'll start with you, Evan. What's your answer to this poll? And the question is, will he catch Sakic at 54 goals? Will he not catch Sakic but score more than 50? Will he get exactly as many as Sakic, or will he not get 50 at all? And I told people to explain if they thought that.
There's 10 games left. He's on 49 now. He could have been on 50 after this week, and my bold prediction was almost right, and I'm a little ticked about it still. But anyway, if they had just given that Makar tipped goal on Friday, but anyway, I digress. I think he'll definitely get past 50 for sure at this point. He might do it tonight. Honestly, yeah. I could see that happening. I don't know if he'll get past 54. I don't know. I would like to think so.
Right.
Because, I mean, you have what? You've got Ducks tonight. You've got Sharks twice. You still have Anaheim another time after tonight. I'm thinking of the hard games, like Minnesota, Dallas, obviously this week, and then LA. And that's really it, I think, yeah. Right?
So there's a good chance at it, given the level of competition.
I was going to say, you know, I changed my mind. He surpasses it.
There you go.
He surpasses it.
Yep. Yeah, the way I put it was catch, surpass, fall short, but get 50 plus or less than 50. So, Jackie, what's your answer to this question?
It might be close. I think he'll get to 50. I mean, knock on wood, assuming, you know, nothing happens, like he gets injured, God forbid. Right. But
God, I'm knocking on wood now.
I know. But he has been pretty consistent. So I think that he hasn't got to this point because he was like super hot for like 3 weeks or something. Like he's been very consistent. So yeah. With 10 more games, you think it's not unfathomable to think he could get like 6 or 7 more. But I'm just going to say just under it, though. I think it, as we've seen, it's really hard to get that milestone when you get close. But I think he'll finish over 50. So maybe like 52, I'll say.
Yeah, well, he's already top 10 all time, Nordiques and Avs history with 48. There's like, I want to say like 4 or 5 guys tied at 48 with, I think, Milan Hayduk in there too, coincidentally. But I'll go to you, Ezra. It seems like we're like hopeful that he can at least catch him or get there. But the voters agree with the first two opinions from Evan and Jackie that he'll get 50 plus but fall short by 62%. Do you agree with that?
I mean, that's definitely the safer bet, right? He's got 10 games to go. We're talking about 6 goals. Miko's playing at over a point, over a goal per game pace right now. But realistically, everybody's around. Not over a goal per game. Over half a goal per game.
Yeah.
But realistically, you know, that's a hard number to sustain. So it makes sense to take the under here. The under 54, not the under 50. like with the Avs injury luck this year, again, it makes sense to take the under. But, man, yeah. Have some faith in your boy.
Yeah.
You know, let's take the over, everybody. Come on.
That's how I feel. I say ask me tomorrow. Because if he gets 2 tonight, which I'm not saying, and maybe that's my bold prediction, that he'll get 2 tonight, and he gets his 50th in Anaheim, heading back to a game that against the Wild that's largely going to be about winning, especially if he's already got 50, I think that takes the edge off, and then the next 2 or 3 become a lot easier and more about being just coming from being within the game. Whereas, like, I feel like tonight, looking at it, from their perspective, they're like, this team we should beat. And Miko's probably like, I should eat tonight, because he is a point per game player against Anaheim in his career. So I'm with you, Ezra. Like, I'm like, let's let it fly, baby. It's been a great year for Miko, and if McKinnon's gonna get 100, it's probably gonna be largely about how well they do on the power play. And right now the power play is hot. They're playing some lowly competition in the next couple of weeks, sprinkled in some really, really important games this week. I think the stars are aligning for both things to happen. But I'll go to my second poll of the week. I basically just kind of wanted to see what fans had more pride in right now, because I feel like the Nathan McKinnon getting to 100 points thing has been something we've wanted for him for quite some time. Whereas we didn't really know if I think if you would have told me when we drafted Mikko Rantanen, oh, he'll be a 50 goal scorer one day, I'd have laughed in your face. So I feel like from my point of view, I'm not that I don't want Mikko to score 50 or 54. Don't get me wrong. I'm more like prideful and hopeful that McKinnon gets to 100 to 100 just out of personal achievement, because I think he doesn't like to lean on it matters, but I think it does matter to a guy like him who's just very competitive. And the only way to, and I guess, quantify that competitiveness is with stats and success. So, Evan, what do you think? Like, what's your answer? Are you more excited about Mikko 50 or a McKinnon 100 points?
All I got to say is I don't need a printer. I need a fax machine because of everything that you just said. Or retweet if you're in my generation. Push that retweet button. Because I completely agree with you. It would definitely be a big personal achievement for Mac to get to 100 points. And I think that's going to happen, as you already mentioned, with the power play rolling. And with the two combined, I wouldn't see why not. That you can't get both 100 points for McKinnon and 50 goals for Rantanen. And, you know, that's also why I changed my mind in the last poll of, like, you know what, power play is rolling. You know, he's got McKinnon on his line now with him. They're going to roll through people. And so I think they're both going to get it. But I definitely do think that whatever, even if McKinnon will say post game in the locker room after he gets point number 100, if that is of any importance to him and he says, oh, no, it's all about the team, it's going to be important to him. I feel like deep down in his heart. So he just won't admit it. Maybe he'll admit it in after the offseason, after they win the cup again. Who knows?
Yeah. That's right. And if you're these guys, it's also a bargaining chip. Like if you end up at the end of a contract and you've been a 50 goal scorer, that's forever. That can't be taken off your record. You know what I mean? That's that's like getting a very, very valuable certification in any other field. Same with 100 points. If you're a 100 point scorer in the NHL, you'll be that forever, at least in the minds of some franchise. So I think it's a big deal to them personally. And obviously their overarching goal is to win as a team. But if you win as a team, typically those stats follow, especially for like your big guns like Nathan McKinnon and Mikko Rantanen. But we're playing the most annoying would you rather ever, so you can't have both, Jackie. Which is your choice, Mikko to get 50 plus or Nathan to get 100 points?
I would say Mikko get the 50. And I mean, of course, both would be great, and I totally agree that, I mean, McKinnon's been so close. He was at 99 literally once. And it doesn't matter to him, because I know it happened once in the summer where Marchand and Crosby both had 100 that year and he didn't, and so they were giving him crap about that. But I just think hitting 50 is a little bit more, I don't know, hard to do. Not to say that hitting 100 is easy, but
goals.
Because so many things can happen, and it's like you can get points so many different ways, and you obviously don't have to score. You don't even have to have the primary. But 50 goals, like, it, and I think it would speak to just how, like I said earlier, how consistent he's been, how he's carried this team at points this year. And that's something that it might not happen every year. Like and he's been very good over his career. And so I think he'll have another shot at it. I just think it's a little bit more special. It's a little bit more rare. I think there's fewer players in the league every year that hit 50 versus 100 points. Like, there's probably going to be at least, 10 guys that hit 100 points, if not more. So, if I had to choose, I think I would like that for Mikko, especially to have that this year. And because you never know, like, he might not hit 50 again. And like you said, like, even if you do it once, you're known as a quote-unquote 50-goal scorer. And so, I just think it's a little bit more meaningful.
Ezra, what do you think, Mikko or Nate?
Man, I'm going to choose Mikko, but only for one reason, and that is he's already at 48. If he doesn't get to 50, something went wrong.
So, yeah. Good point.
That's fair,
I can't have another injury. I can't.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's like so well put, given the full scope of the season. It's like we're talking about milestones that in reality given the way the season has gone, we're fortunate to be talking about it. It speaks to the longevity, I guess, or the resilience of these two players, that they've been available enough inside of a season where availability was kind of the main storyline, right? So good point, Ezra. And I'll backtrack then my answer of McKinnon, because I do think it's a more emotional answer, because it is just like Jackie said, getting to 99 and not getting to 100. And then when you talk to fans of other teams in the league, and they're like, well, but he's never a 100-point goal or never a 100-point scorer. And it's like, yeah, but he's Nathan fucking McKinnon. Like, let's chill out, you know? So I pardon my French.
Yeah, but if I was guaranteed that both guys didn't get injured, and that's not why, then I think I'd go Nate, because of exactly what's been said already. He's the man, you know? He's worked so hard for it, and Miko too, in the same way. But like, yeah, that 100-point mark has been the benchmark that's been separating him from the Crosby McDavid, you know, truly elite conversation for some reason.
Yeah, exactly.
Clearly is,
especially now that he's got a cup. So this will be like one of the last few remaining boxes for him to check in such a young career. So I agree with that. Yeah, yeah.
That's why I did it. But I guess I guess I'll undo my retweet. And go get a printer instead.
I believe everything I said, but playing both sides of the fence is very convenient.
I know that I broke the rules. That's on me.
So the 56% of 135 votes say Nate Dogg reaching 100 points is what they would choose if they could only have one. So I think they're same. I think if you're wondering what the vibe is on Twitter, it's emotional. So for me to say that the emotional vote is Nathan McKinnon, I think that aligns with this. So that was our poll of the week. Well, this week it was two polls, so we got a bonus poll. If you didn't get to see that, it's because you're not a Twitter user, or you are and just don't follow us, which is a huge mistake if you're an Avalanche fan. So if you don't follow us, you can follow us at @MHH_lab, and then just the website at Mile High Hockey. And head over to the website for all of your latest and greatest Colorado Avalanche news. You'll find work from the three of us and a few more contributors as well. And we take a lot of pride in what we do, so we hope you enjoy our work. That'll kind of move me on to our third and final segment. Well, I guess maybe not our final, but I want to look ahead. Yeah, I want to look ahead at the week and at tonight's game against Anaheim. Based on the fact that Alexander Georgiev went 7 rounds and played just last night in a shootout, Jonas Johansson, I think that's how you say it, I hope so, will get the net tonight for Colorado, who previously lost in January the last time these two teams met in Colorado. I was there. It was not fun. They lost 5-3 to the Ducks. Are the Ducks kind of like the Coyotes in that they are sort of a thorn in Colorado's side, especially this time of year? I'll start with you, Ezra.
I mean, yeah, I think that it's like any bad team, really. They're a thorn in your side until you pluck them out and throw them away, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Cause they have that ability to be a game that's overlooked and not treated with enough respect and therefore lost. And I think that this current version of the Avs, they nearly let that happen last night. They're not going to let that happen again. And I think they know the score in the standings right now. They know they can't be taking any team lightly. And I think it's going to, I don't want to get too homerish or too high on anything here, but if they don't blow them out, I'll be shocked.
Yeah. That's like, I say this a lot about the Nuggets, because I don't know if you guys are followers of basketball, but the Nuggets are on a pretty similar trajectory to the Avs, just in terms of they've been on the cusp of winning, and this looks like it might be the year for them. But as of late, they've had a difficult time putting away bad teams, and I think that really shows championship caliber when a team takes care of business against a team they're supposed to beat. And I think you're onto something, Ezra. Like when you say they're not so much a thorn in your side as much as they represent like an opportunity to fail and to really not get 2 points that you should get. So, Jackie, what do you think about that? Do you think, and I know John Gibson kind of plays into this in particular for Anaheim, do you think that Anaheim is similar to the Coyotes and that they kind of have the Avalanche number in certain scenarios?
I don't think as much, and it's hard to say because the Avs have only played Anaheim once this year, and I was at that game as well, and were dominating.
They were. That's why it was frustrating.
I think at least half of that game, like definitely the first period. I don't remember the second period as much, but that third period was atrocious. So, like I said earlier, I feel like Arizona is separate from all these bad teams. I think there's just a little bit something about their style or the matchup that's more real than just like getting up for a bad team. So, you know, it's tough because I think they expended a lot of mental energy on beating the Coyotes last night. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to say like they definitely just should roll these bad teams, but they really should because they've gotten back on track. Like when they had their disappointments against Anaheim and it was Chicago early on, that was more like January. And I think they've moved past that. But we'll see. Like, for me, the big test is San Jose, because I don't know if any of y'all have seen San Jose lately, but they are all in on the tank. Like, if the Avs even halfway show up, they have to beat San Jose. I mean, it's just mind-blowing how, like, and it's like they figured out the formula. Like, you can't really shamelessly tank the entire season. Because then you have young players and guys with something to prove. You just can't be that deplorable for 8 months. But if you pull the plug at the right time, like San Jose has done, like I wouldn't be shocked if they didn't win another game the rest of this season. They might win one just because hockey's a weird sport and the puck bounce is weird, but honestly, more than that, I'd be really surprised. So for me, that's the one where like the Avs just have to show up and have to have like some semblance of care and try in that game, and they should be able to roll. Like that's the game where I want to see the Mikko and McKinnon like try to get the point show.
Exactly. Yeah.
So tonight for me, I don't think is as much of like easy street or whatever you want to call it. Like they're still going to have to try because Anaheim does have skill. Like every NHL team has skill. Some guys, their guys get paid too, but I think the Avs can take care of business. What I'm trying to say, like, I don't think it's going to be easy necessarily, but Anaheim is really bad too. And it's weird because I didn't think they were going to be that bad this year because they've accumulated talent, and it's just for whatever reason, I actually think it's coaching is the reason. Like, they just have no direction. And so the Avs should be able to dominate like how they began that game in January and then be able to finish the job.
Yeah, what's funny is I'm looking at Tankathon right now. And before I ask you, Evan, I'm gonna simulate the draft lottery. San Jose with the most losses, I guess, or least points. They've lost 9 straight. Columbus, same amount of points, 3-6-1 in their last 10. Chicago is third. They've lost their last 5. Anaheim is fourth. They've lost their last 4. And Montreal has won their just won. They're 3-5-2. So I'll simulate it real quick.
All right.
Let's see who we got. Oh, my God. This is crazy. I hope to God this happens because the NHL world will lose its mind. Vancouver jumps 9 spots to the first overall pick. San Jose with the second pick. Columbus with the third. It pretty much follows suit after that in the top 10. Yeah. No, it exactly follows suit after that in the top 10. So basically, imagine Vancouver getting the first.
Those fans think they're going to offer Sheet Byram now. Like they really let it go.
Yeah. Wow. So I wanted to do simulation because I feel like anytime you're playing a team that's in the top 5 of this Tankathon simulation, you should win handedly, especially if you're a defending champion. But I mentioned John Gibson, and I saw you, Evan, kind of nod your head. You're constantly concerned about the Avalanche getting goalied. Are you worried tonight?
Oh, every time. Every time. I mean, we've seen it with Connor Ingram now for the last, like, 3 games or whatever. but no, John Gibson, you can't overlook him. I mean, he is definitely part of the reason why the Ducks are staying in games, because he makes 50 saves a night.
He made 41 saves in the game in January against the Avs.
Exactly. So, you know, if he's able to do his job and goalie the Avs, then his team's always going to have a chance. And of course, when you have Trevor freaking Zegras too, who is just an all-class talent. Like that's also going to help your team a lot too. So I always look forward to watching Trevor Zegras. I hope he does something cool, but after the Avs are winning like 6-0, that's when I hope he does something cool. So
yeah,
we'll see though. I mean, they don't have John Klingberg anymore, but Klingberg wasn't really fitting in anyway in the first place down there. Yeah. So, I mean, it's really the Zegras and Gibson show, I guess you could say.
Little Troy Terry added in there. That but yeah, too, yeah, absolutely. I'm going to simulate this one more time because I feel like that was just the craziest simulation that's ever been conjured on this. And it's the first one we've ever done. Okay, this seems a little more. San Jose gets the first. Good for them. Detroit moves up 6 spots to get the second. Columbus moves down 1. Chicago moves down 1. Oh, my God. Montreal moved up 9 from 9 spots to get the 5th pick.
So Jesus,
this simulator is just
it's all over the place
right now, but nonetheless, that's kind of interesting. Jackie, you said that I thought it was interesting that you said San Jose seems to have the formula to tank. That's a really good way to put it, because I feel like Montreal has the opposite. Like, they have the formula to almost tank, and maybe they should just tank sometimes.
Same with Arizona.
They already got the first overall. Like, Montreal's already done it.
Yeah.
I think there's teams that have been worse than others. Like, I don't think Arizona or Montreal has been that bad. Like, I know their record's not great, but like, they're closer to that Ottawa Buffalo tier where maybe just another step and they could figure it out. And then there's like just the teams that just, like, Chicago has no assets. Like, I don't even like their prospects. Like, they just have nothing.
Yeah.
They're so in for it hard. And then San Jose, I didn't think started the year that terrible, but they're all in now. So, well, it's weird that even in the bottom there's different tiers of bad, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's funny. I agree, it's weird, cuz even in the wild card, there seem to be no different tiers of bad. Everyone just wants to lose right now on both the East and the West. It seems like Calgary is like
a pretty sad race.
Yeah, it's like Calgary's like, nah, we're good, guys. Keep doing your thing. We don't want to be a playoff team. But speaking of playoff teams, the Avalanche will play 2 this week. And the other 2 in the Central Division race looking for that number 1 spot to basically avoid playing one or the other. Dallas does not have a pick in the first round. Minnesota has 1 in 24th overall. Like I said, they're good teams. What are you most keen on in these matchups, Evan? And which one do you think the Avs should be more concerned with? Obviously, both matter, but what poses a bigger threat matchup-wise?
Yeah, I was going to say, this week, honestly, I feel like we'll probably determine the Central Division.
Right.
With these 2 games. I mean, it's huge. I mean, I'm looking back at the schedule right now. If I'm not mistaken, the Avs have beaten Minnesota every single time this year.
I think so
that's awesome. I'm glad to hear that. They've got their number, and with Kirill Kaprizov hurt and out of the lineup, that's also not going to help their cause either,
right?
But somehow, aren't they in first right now? Like, somehow they're in first.
Yeah.
Somehow they're in first. Maybe that changes after tonight, which would be awesome. But anyway, so then I turn my attention more than towards Dallas. That's the one where I would be more interested / concerned about, I guess you could say. Just because they do have the Az's number. I mean, we saw that last game when they blew him out of the water in Dallas. Obviously, that was different time, of course, even just a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, Dallas is almost kind of like Arizona, where they're just pesky and annoying, but they're actually good. Yeah. And they'll actually do something about it and take their chances and have the skill and the firepower to do it, both on offense and defense. So that's the one I'm more concerned about. That's the one where I'd want to see the Avs play a more complete game. And not do what they've done the last couple of games, like against Arizona, where they take a break or, you know, get outplayed for a little bit. If I can get a full 60 minutes against Arizona or against Dallas and maybe be like a 3-2 game, I would love that. I would really, really love that.
Yeah, that makes sense. If you look at, like you were mentioning, their head-to-head stuff, they're 2-1 against Dallas. This is as much of a tie, though, as you could ever have, basically. They both have 10 goals for and against, obviously, and that ratio is in a perfect alignment. So I wouldn't be surprised if you're right, and that's the toughest competition. With that said, the Wild, like you mentioned, were undefeated. The Avs have 9-4. And 5 against. Jackie, do you share the same opinion? Are you more concerned with Dallas? And is that why it's so important to win the Central, so that Dallas has to play Minnesota before us?
You know, I'm not really as worried about winning the division. I guess it kind of feels like when you've won that, you won the President's Trophy, you've won the Cup, too, that like, it doesn't matter as much. Like, it never mattered really to Tampa Bay to win the division. And the way that the league is, if the Avs don't happen to get into the Final Four and they don't win the division, the draft pick is a lot better. Like, it could be around 20, so there'd be some sort of benefit there. I'd like to see them at least get to second, where they have home ice, and then if it does happen to where, if they get to second, I don't know that Dallas would be third. Dallas might still win the division, and then they don't play them anyway.
Okay.
I guess overall I am more worried about Dallas. Like, I know right now Minnesota has the division lead. I am a little bit concerned about sweeping Minnesota. I don't know if you can really assume that. Right. So it almost seems like primed for a little bit of a letdown against that team. But I do think that their bigger test is Dallas at this point. Because, yeah, I think they have a little bit more to prove there. And I also think Dallas also has a really soft schedule to end this season. Minnesota's is a little tougher. I think they have to play Vegas twice in the next week or so. So I think their road's a little tougher. So if I had to pick one to beat, it probably would be Dallas at this point.
Gotcha. Gotcha. That makes sense. I agree. I feel like if there's one that'll say more about the Avs, it's also the Dallas game. Just based on how they've played against them, as we previously mentioned. Ezra, Evan kind of mentioned this a little bit. Is this the most important week of hockey for the Avalanche since last year's playoffs? And do you foresee them leading the Central Division before our episode next Monday?
Is it the most important week of hockey is a really interesting question, because I feel like the next week is always the most important week. You know what I mean? Like, we can always say that when we're like, when we come up with some storyline that they need to that they need to prove themselves, or they need to get back on track, or they need to. So there's so many important weeks in the regular season. That's kind of a cop out answer. I'll change it to yes.
I agree.
Yeah,
it's our job to make it the most important week of the season.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I got you. But I do think they're gonna be at the top of the Central by the end of this week. I don't know if they beat Minnesota, but I do think they beat Dallas, and I agree with Jackie 100% that that's the more important win. Sweeping a team like Minnesota, even without Kaprizov in this upcoming game, getting a sweep in the regular season is very, very difficult. It's very unlikely. It just doesn't happen very often, even if the teams match up on paper, like the Avs should be able to win this next one. Minnesota's not going to want to go 0-for against Colorado, so they might come out with some extra jump. We'll see. But I think looking at all the team's schedules, Minnesota is more likely to drop one than Dallas. But Dallas is going to drop one to Colorado, in my opinion, and my hopes and dreams. So I'll say, yeah, let's be on top of the division by the end of this.
Well, coincidentally, when you mentioned sweeps not being very likely, especially within the division, the Avalanche could potentially sweep the Coyotes, the Predators, and the St. Louis. Oh, just kidding. Not the St. Louis Blues.
Not the Coyotes.
Not the Coyotes.
Oh, what am I looking at here? Oh, I did wins. I lied. Hold on.
And I think not the Predators.
Just the Predators. Just the Predators.
And the Sharks, too. And the Sharks.
But we've only I guess we only played them once. Yeah.
Not there yet. They should, though. They really, truly should.
The Hurricanes, though, 2-0. Yeah. That's a good one.
That's Oilers. A good point. That's a good point to think about which teams the Avs have swept this year.
Yeah. Oilers 2-0. Wild 2-0. Columbus. Yeah. Columbus. Montreal 2-0. Ottawa 2-0. And Capitals 2-0. So They did pretty good in terms of beating up on the teams that they think they can beat up on. Let's see who they've lost the most to: Vancouver, Boston, New Jersey.
There's a one outlier out there.
Yeah. I know
that team that jumped 9 spots in the draft lottery earlier.
All those Vancouver games happened in like peak injury season too, so yeah. that means a little bit less. But but still, it was like truly like the worst of the injuries in the early season, and then the worst of the injuries in the middle of the season were when
Vancouver. So I think I'll open up the conversation and see if the three of you have anything in particular that was pressing your mind. And if not, we can get into our bold predictions of the week. I don't think anybody hit. I know for a fact I didn't. Not on next week's bold prediction either. Although, I mean, it might just be that one game if we're talking about it. So, you guys got anything you want to talk about?
I'm still just upset that I didn't get mine. Because I was so close. Because when I was in the building on Friday, right, like I said before. So they initially announced in the arena on Friday that Makar's goal was actually given to Rantanen. That it
so you're losing it. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, oh my God, it's happening. Yeah. And then I like go back and I'm like, oh wait, they gave it back to Makar. Shucks, whatever. And then, of course, you know, Rantanen had the referee block his empty net shot and then, you know, was pulled down like 10 feet from the net and didn't give him the goal on an empty netter there. So I don't know. He definitely could have done it this week, and I'm upset about it because I bet you somebody out there probably placed a bet on him getting 50 by the end of the week and did not win money because of it. Yeah. So that's unfortunate.
Yeah. Somebody, huh?
Somebody. It wasn't me.
I'm just kidding.
It was the ref who didn't call the penalty.
Yeah, it was the ref who got in the puck's way.
Like I said, Randon's rage against the refs continue. Anyway, for a bold prediction for this week, obviously this week is huge, as we've already stated before. And I briefly mentioned, you know, the Dallas game and kind of what my thoughts were on that. I think if they play a full 60 minutes and come on top 3-2, I think that'd be perfect. That won't be my bold prediction. That'll be a separate prediction, just a game prediction, I guess. So I guess I'll go bold prediction. They go undefeated this week. They do all 4 games.
Be a huge week.
Yeah.
It would be an absolute, I mean, now's the time to do it, right? I'm sure Bednar is probably pounding that in the guys' brains, is that, hey, this week is a huge week. I'd be a little bit worried tonight since they're on the other end of a back-to-back, but considering they have over 24 hours since yesterday's game was an afternoon game, that will help and benefit them. So
I like it.
I say 4-0.
That's my kind of bold prediction. Jackie, I'll ask you, do you have anything you want to talk about that we didn't touch on? And if not, what's your bold prediction?
I think there's another milestone that we didn't really talk about, and it's smaller, but I think it would be really nice if Byram got to 10 goals. He's at 8 right now.
Ooh.
Good, like 10 good goals point. For a defenseman, I think is a milestone. Yeah. And then considering how much time he missed this year, and obviously, like you said, how young he is, I think that would be a nice feather in his cap. I also think it qualifies him for a bonus if he hits 10 goals.
Money.
And so that might also personally matter.
Yeah.
So I can tie that into a bold prediction that if he hit that 10 goal mark this week, would be pretty sweet. And that would also probably lead to winning. That if you're getting goals from defensemen, you're probably going to win the game.
Nice. That'd love it.
Be a nice bonus. If there's anything I can say, I think young boys like money. I'm just saying.
I'm gonna have to edit that one. I'm just kidding.
I didn't even think about that.
Why would you? I'm the asshole here, not you. I'm the asshole. Anyway.
Yeah.
Ezra.
Comedian brain didn't even go there.
Ezra, I was like, I better say it because Ezra's thinking it, but nonetheless.
No, I wasn't.
Christ. My mom was the only one who probably loves me for real. Ezra, let's hear. You got anything to talk about we didn't touch on? And do you have a bold prediction not involving little boys?
Well, I just want to say I'm thrilled that Evan Rodriguez only ended up missing one game with that concussion, because
that was
you never know what's going to happen with concussions, and definitely seeing him kind of acting weird on the ice, like the him being angry at a ref is something we don't see very often after the hit, and then taking a shot at somebody we also don't see that much out of Evan Rodriguez. So I was like, oh, this is out of character for him. And then to see him miss games with a concussion, I'm like, oh no, his brain's broke. Oh fuck. But he's back, and that's great. And I just wanted to say I'm excited about that. Good for him. And then bold prediction wise, let's see. Last week it was Compher gets a point in every game, and he came very close. He was very good last week, but he did not score in the first game of the week, so I was immediately disqualified. So this week I'm gonna go. I'm going to say Darren Helm gets back on the score sheet with a goal and an assist this week.
Nice.
I like that. I could see Helm getting a goal tonight. I could see that.
I could see Helm getting a big goal against Dallas or Minnesota. I like that a lot.
He likes a big goal.
As I say, he's got big goals against Central Division teams before.
You guys are really trying to get me today. I'm actually mad at you, Evan, for not knowing what you sounded like when you said that.
But I apologize for
inconvenience. Hey, you know, hopefully half of the people who listen to us find it funny, and the other half are like, what the hell are these people talking
about?
What
are they doing? I did also think of another milestone. Shout out to Nathan MacKinnon, 700th career NHL game tonight.
Wow.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty awesome. Hopefully he does good on it tonight.
That would be very nice. So I have your bold predictions written right here. What's up, Ezra?
One other piece of news. I forgive me if we covered this last week, but Bednar's extension. I don't think we.
Yeah, we did not.
Oh, we did not. So. You're right.
Yeah. Dang.
Which, you know, there's not too much to say about it. It's just exciting, and I'm happy for him.
But. Well, I love it because I feel like it flies in the face of all the toxic Avalanche fans on social media who are like, as soon as they lost to Pittsburgh, it was, that's the worst loss of the season. What is Bednar doing? Mm-hmm. Jackie, do you feel like that? Do you feel similarly to me in terms of that sentiment?
Yeah, definitely. And that certainly wasn't the worst loss.
No, right? I was like,
really quick off the top of my head, they were worse. But, Yeah, it was an interesting surprise. I mean, the timing of it, the Avs don't really do a lot of in-season signings. And it's different than signing a player, sure, but they also kind of took their time when they gave him his last extension. Mm-hmm. So it was interesting.
Does that make you wonder, like, if he was sought after, possibly, from other teams? I mean, I'm sure he's sought after, but do you think maybe there was something that the Avs were threatened by? Because they pulled a similar move to keep McFarland around because he was pretty heavily sought after.
I mean, maybe, yeah, because kind of the trend is you don't let a coach get to his last year of his contract. And maybe, and especially since they put him in that upper tier, that $5 million, I think he's probably not the highest paid, but it's the upper tier. Mm-hmm. So maybe once you've decided that you're going to go there, you just get it done. But yeah, it is interesting that they were a little bit more proactive about it. So it's possible that they just wanted to lock it down, and makes me think, like, are they going to sign anybody else? Are they going to sign any prospects? Because this is the season for prospect signing with the NCAA wrapping up. And
I was curious about that, too. I wanted to see if you had, you know, maybe identified anyone that's technically a free agent. From the tournament. Ezra, have you seen anyone, or Jackie, or all of you?
I was going to say, there was someone that was just signed today, and I can't remember who it was.
For the Eagles, you mean? It was, I can't think of his name off the top of my head. It was from Minnesota State. You know, I mean, they got Myers last year, and he was, like, really sought after, and we saw maybe he didn't have as big of an impact as they had hoped. I don't think they're done with him, but so I don't really know that, like, college free agents would be that meaningful attractive for them to get. I'm more curious about if they're going to sign any of their own. I would think the two.
Kovalenko, maybe?
Who knows? You can never guess with Russians, but I definitely wouldn't expect it. And I don't really think you can, because their league year runs out May 1st, so
it's going to go over.
May 1st is like our July 1st. So, yeah. And he's still signed for next year, but who knows? Money always talks when it comes to that stuff, but mm-hmm. they'd have to really want to throw down. I would just say that two Avs prospects would be Sean Behrens, who is the defenseman for DU. I don't think he's going to sign, but I think there's a lot of anticipation out in the fan base.
Okay.
Because he can. I just don't think it benefits him at this point because I don't think the Avs are going to give him a lot of incentive. And okay. if he gets to that junior year, I think that's when the player gets some leverage and it's probably a better idea for him. The gotcha. Other one I also think is Matt Steinberg, who's a senior at Cornell.
Gotcha.
And they should sign him if they're interested in signing him at all. Like, the time is kind of now. So that's the one I'm kind of looking for in the next week or so, because if they really don't sign him now, then they're not going to.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. We'll see.
Ezra, you look like you had somebody you wanted to talk about as well.
Not really. I just looked up the Eagles signing. It's Ryan Sandelin, forward out of Minnesota State.
Nice.
I didn't really watch much college hockey. I didn't get to watch the tournament, so I don't really have anybody. But I will say, looking over Steinberg's stats over his career and reading about him from people who watched him, he doesn't seem like he's going to move the needle much. So if they don't sign him, I don't think that's that big of a deal. But if they do, great. Love to see what he can do.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm all about repopulating that prospect pool given the last couple of years. So I think I'm kind of with Jackie on that, although I agree it's not necessarily going to move the needle. I just think you need to replenish some of that equity you lost by trading away some draft picks.
Definitely, yeah. If they view him as a better value in the AHL system than, say, an AHL veteran, fantastic. Yeah.
It's like, who else are you going to sign? Nobody else.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah,
took him with the first pick in the third round. Like, those guys, before you even pick them, you pretty much think you're going to have to sign this guy. So,
yeah. He was an overager when he was picked, and it was kind of a surprise. He seemed like at the time, people wrote a lot of negative stuff about him at the time. I'm just saying, he didn't really do that much in college. But if he is somebody that they see as a fit, that's great. I'd love him to.
Was he in our top 25 under 25, or was he
probably
out?
I think only like three people didn't make it. So yeah. I know. Are we gonna have a 25 this year?
Let's see. I still have them. Let's see. Steinberg.
I mean, I did watch him in the tournament. I feel like he does have that really like power forward type game. He's sort of like Sampo Ranta, but like in a weird way the opposite. Like, Sampo really isn't that smart, and he is, but I think Sampo has more skill. Mm. So I don't know. I mean, like I said, they got to sign somebody. So why not? Center,
which there's not a lot of center depth in the AHL.
Steinberg was 18th.
Just ahead of Nikolai Kovalenko. So we're talking about the right people.
Kovalenko will be a lot higher just because of the year he had in the KHL. But
Kovalenko gets an NHL look right away, I would think.
He's not coming over for the AHL.
I know Evan Rowell has been very high on him. And rightfully so. So
yeah.
From one Evan to another, I agree.
I love Kovalenko's game. Yeah, I watched it for years now. Yeah, he would.
That's awesome.
He would be fun, that's for sure.
Well, that would also throw into the side of the sentimenters that say the Avs punted on the trade deadline as if they had another choice. So if they bring in a guy like Kovalenko and he actually does move the needle, that one will be quite a shock to me, just given the circumstances. But also it would be pretty freaking awesome. That, I'm all for it. So
I don't think that's possible.
Yeah,
if there's anyone that moves a needle, it's him.
Well, he's very good for his team in Russia. So I don't know how much water that holds. We saw who's the last guy we saw come over and play for the Kings. He was a little bit older though. But he had a stint in the NHL, went to the KHL, and then came back. I can't remember his name, but I think he's the last like Russian to come from the KHL that actually, you know.
I'd say even Kuzmenko this year for Vancouver.
Yeah,
like,
that's true.
Happened.
Yeah. That's true.
And I mean, Kaprizov.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good point.
What I like a lot about Kovalenko is just the way he forechecks. Like, I just think that'd be such a good fit. in the system and for Bednar. Like, I don't know how much of the skill will translate because, but at least he has it. Like, he's at least on par with the others that chip in a little bit of offense here and there. But just to get him to come and play that hard, heavy, super aggressive. I mean, if people think they like the way that Logan O'Connor forechecks, oh my goodness, you are in for a treat. He's on the edge a little bit. Like, he'll take a few penalties. But when you play that hard, you kind of have to expect it. So that's why I think it's so exciting. Not necessarily like, oh, free top six player, he's going to score 50 points for the Avs. It's just like, he's such a good fit. You would just love to see that what he could do in that kind of role, because that's the kind of stuff that the Avs and Bednar in particular like.
Yeah. Well, who knows? We got a Russian already on the squad, and he showed off those filthy mitts last night. True. So maybe he could broker some of that other stuff, you know, that we don't quite understand as North Americans, and the difference between our culture and Russian culture. So some of that stuff could kind of get smoothed over, especially he might have somewhere to stay, given Nichushkin likely lives in the area, having just signed his contract. So who knows? It's a possibility, and something that I would be really excited to see. But that ends the program for today. Just want to thank the three of you for joining me. It's been a really fun conversation. Sorry, Ezra, I didn't mean to cut you off there, buddy.
No.
If you're listening on YouTube and watching, thank you so much, first of all. And secondly, like, subscribe, and share with your fellow Avalanche fans. As I previously mentioned, head on over to milehighhockey.com for all of your news, all contributors here and more not here. We didn't have Jacob today, but Jacob, hi. Hopefully we get you on next week. So thank you guys for listening, and ladies and just people. We are available on Spotify, iTunes, and Audible. Go Avalanche. Hopefully they beat the Ducks tonight.
Mile High Hockey Lab.
Mile High Hockey Lab.
It's cold, but